I heard of a guy actually who, with like a hammer tacker.
Oh, here we go.
It's
you got to watch out for
one those. Of his good listen, friends, listen, and like sunk a listen. Staple straight into a poor guy's leg. I don't know who would do that.
I have to defend myself. It was an accident, mind you. I was being foolish.
An accident.
Okay, so here's my recollection of the story. I had it coming, for sure. I'd done something to deserve it. But my recollection is that you came at me with the hammer tacker, and I had knee pads on, and you were trying to hit me on the knee pad.
That's correct.
So yes. He's like coming at my legs, like, oh crap, he's gonna hit me. And of course I'm like, ugh, I move, and he just like chunk into the meat of the, you know, inside of my shin. And I look, and all I see is the crown of the staple, flush with my flesh.
Yeah.
And I remember like, ow, and then just took my fingernail and popped it out. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Efficient by Design podcast. I'm here again with my brother, Brad, and my good friend and storefront manager, Dustin. We are going to talk through kind of job site dangers and risks and how you would, you know, avoid those as best you can. And so that's going to come with, you know, multiple stories, and some of them are like minor irritations and frustrations, and some of them are like life-threatening, scary, scary stuff. So for a little bit of context, if you aren't aware of our backgrounds, Dustin and I started a construction company in 2006. We worked framing together before that for better part of 4 years, I think, something like that. So framed a bunch, and then Brad framed with me with, so when Dustin left the company, in 2008, Brad had been an autolist for a while by then, came in as a green unskilled laborer, and then worked framing for how many years?
I was a green skilled laborer. You said unskilled.
Yeah. He meant you needed to learn some skills, but I too feel you came skilled.
Yeah. Yeah. I was skilled. Yeah. No, I just didn't know anything about construction, if that's what you mean.
You had other skills.
I was terrible at construction.
But you spent what, off and on 5-6 years?
Yeah.
Working framing with me.
Yep.
And I've framed, yeah, kind of for about 25 years. So we've built, you know, hundreds and hundreds of structures, homes, apartments, between 300 and 400 houses. And we did basically concrete and framing. So that's kind of the realm that we're going to talk about and the stories that go along with it. So that kind of entails everything from like, you know, tool safety and clumsiness and working with cranes and high wind and all of that stuff. So I've got a giant list that we kind of brainstormed to put together, and we can kind of talk through it. And then if things come to mind that you want to touch on that are relevant, then we'll kind of talk about the scenario that took place and what we maybe could have or should have done differently. There's a lot of those. Mm-hmm. What actually brought this up to me as an idea to kind of do this as a podcast was last week I was sitting in my office. I was doing bookkeeping and messaging and paperwork, and we had a windstorm outside, and I was sitting at the computer and I'm typing and reading emails, and I was just like tension in my body because I'm just hearing trees whipping around and metal on the roof rattling a little bit and creaking of this old building. And I was like, oh, I just have so much tension in my body. I'm like, it's friggin' wind. And then it occurred to me, I'm like, I wonder if that is amplified greatly due to my framing background, mm-hmm. because on a job site, wind is maybe my least favorite natural element. It is awful. I mean, a little bit of a breeze on a hot day, wonderful. But gusty, hard wind, mm-hmm. you know, like it can be so bad. So we've got so many stories of issues with wind and things falling down. So I did a poll. I did an Instagram story, and I just kind of described like, hey, is this just a regular everyday person thing, or is this like a tradesman amplified scenario? And I got a ton of feedback and people like, oh, it's definitely a tradesman thing. You know, we're so accustomed to like the kind of tension and anxiety that you get when you hear wind. And I know if I'm mm-hmm. laying in bed at night and there's a windstorm up at our place mm-hmm. and I'm hearing things outside blow around and the wind is whistling, I'm just tense because mm-hmm. I've had yeah. sleepless nights when I was building, thinking about a job, you know, it's on a weekend. And the wind is howling and you're laying in bed at 2 a.m. and you're like, I hope those walls are still up. Yeah. We get there on Monday and hope mm-hmm. that plywood's on, those hose trusses are still there. And did someone tack the sheets down?
Those insulated tarps.
Oh man. Like so many nights where you're just, I've got up, you know, middle of the night and driven to job sites to check. I'm like, I can't sleep. I gotta know.
And the Okanagan Valley's surprisingly windy. Mm-hmm. And I didn't think of that when I lived here last, but since moving back, and especially in Penticton, like where we are in Summerland, you're kind of tucked in into a separate valley, but along the lake, the wind just gets humming.
Probably not as much as where you came from.
Yeah, Lethbridge was crazy.
Is it Leth or Left? Lethbridge?
No. Are you going to validate that comment?
No.
Carry on.
Okay, so you're from Lethbridge. Then what?
Lethbridge. I'm not from there. Okay. I lived there. Super windy.
Yeah.
And actually, there was a friend of mine who was doing some construction in the mountains. So Lethbridge, if you look west, you can just see the Rocky Mountains. And so the Crow's Nest Pass goes through there. And that Crow's Nest Pass Valley, as it comes out onto the prairie, is crazy windy. So like super violent windy that they got signs on the highway, clock in the wind, and it's dangerous and semis get tipped over. And there was a guy doing some construction out there and a whole roof on a house that they were building blew off and was like a sail in the air and went cooking down the valley through the forest, your whole roof. So you show up on Monday and your roof is gone, not just like a few sheets. Mm-hmm. The whole thing.
Yeah.
So here, like we kind of live in a rain shadow. Like it rarely rains here, but high winds through the valley. And you know, we've got a lake. How many kilometers long is Okanagan Lake? Like
maybe 1 kilometer or
like it's like 80 or something. Cause it's
pretty long.
Cause it's like 33 from Penticton to Peachland. And then it goes way up like near Vernon, like 100 and something. It's okay. We're looking it up. So it's long, long lake. 135 kilometer long lake. It's long. So wind cooks through there. We've got mountains. So there's big changes in elevation. Just about 3 minutes from the shop here, up where I live, my folks used to live in a little cul-de-sac just down the road. And their little area is called Gale Place because it's so flipping windy up there. And we've got a valley that empties out right at my house.
Not there. Because of Gale Edwards.
That's what I was thinking.
Gale Edwards founded that cul-de-sac. I don't know if it's named after her or
maybe she was windy. It works both ways. Anyway,
right across the street is this great big compound that this guy built. And he built this barn, this modern day barn, huge structure. And I remember as I was going to and from work, them building this thing, and it was enormous. It was three stories, shed roofs off the side. I can't remember if they put a metal roof on it, but I was watching this thing getting built as I'm going to and from work over a few months. We had a windstorm. Well, they had built this thing. They hadn't sheeted the walls. They had sway braces all over it and they got the roof on and they were gonna go back and sheet it all. I'm coming home from work after windstorm. The entire structure is on the ground.
What?
The whole thing racked over and trusses, walls, everything. They had to start from scratch.
No.
It's unreal. Sheesh. So that's the most extreme consequence I've personally witnessed from wind.
Yeah.
It's this kind of bittersweet thing. I didn't actually get to see it fall. You know, there's that
would be exciting.
And
they
terrible,
were supposed to
and
be able to do that whole project anyway.
Yeah.
There was all kinds
they rebuilt
of stuff.
It. Yeah. It was crazy thing. Wind is brutal. So anyway, that's what kind of got me thinking about this episode was sitting in my office, dealing with the wind, doing the poll, all this feedback from you guys in the trades industry, being like, yes, wind stresses us out. Mm-hmm. I hate it. And also like we grew up riding motorcycles a bit and doing some touring with dad, and you're riding a motorcycle through the prairies at times and just a steady, you know, crosswind.
Yep.
You're actually banked over driving straight because the wind is pushing on you. And then a semi goes by, cuts your wind, and you swerve across the lane, go upright, wind hits you again. Like it just pushes you around. Yeah. So there's, you know, we've got exposure to wind from a variety of ways. And then living out in the Gulf Islands.
That's right.
You know, and doing some sailing and windsurfing and stuff. So it's something I've been around. But the anxiety created by it on the job site, it's kind of
I just
wounded.
Could be done with wind. I actually spent some time looking up what is the benefit of wind. And it wasn't... I was pretty hopeful that I'd be like, hey, no, it's really windy. I got a headache. I can't hear anything. The wind is miserable. I can't do this or that. you know, it's a gorgeous sunny day, but the wind makes it, I have to stay in my house. But aren't we happy that the wind does A? And so I was researching wind to try and figure out, like, what good is the wind? Mm-hmm. The only one I came up with was being able to move soil, sediment, different things that can fly in the air from one place to another. So, like, for example, the wind can move across a desert and pick up minerals and sediments and things and put it somewhere else, which has a benefit. But
pollination and stuff, would it help with?
I don't know. Maybe,
I don't know, though. Fit I think there's in. Lots of good things about wind.
Okay, let's hear one.
A fan?
No. No, we're not talking a breeze.
Okay, what would the Canadian flag be without wind? Just boo.
Breeze. Again,
you need
I'll go
this.
With, yeah. So I would say, appeal to those listening, if you have
wind farms, right? We get our energy from those.
Do we though?
He doesn't get us.
We get some. I think
the best thing about those big windmill things, the massive one, was the one that Luke came up with. We were driving to Vancouver and they have, you know, those three or four big windmills on the top of the connector over there. And I don't know what we were talking about. We were coming up with stupid things that some people actually believe, some kind of conspiracy theories. Yep. And Luke goes on to explain. He's like, okay, I got one. And he makes up this tall tale. How did it go?
So I said, we've got to start. I'm kind of spoiling it by making this public right now, though.
There's going to be a bunch of people on here that are like, no, that's true. Yeah. That's actually
so,
how it works.
So basically what I said was, okay, we need to start a conspiracy that the wind farms that we're getting energy from, they're actually not giving us power at all. The wiring is actually all reversed. That we're providing power to the windmills to spool them up because the rotation of the earth is slowing down.
Yeah.
And they're actually...
And it's creating a problem. And so we need to increase the rotation, spin of the earth.
If you research it, they're all facing the same direction all over the planet.
Every single one, northeast, so that you get the rotational pull and then you get the Polaris effect.
Yeah. So we should be telling our kids this and see if we can get them to.
That was a good one, though. I'm like, again, if you put that online, I'm sure you'd have a bunch of people like, it's true.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Okay, so now let's kind of get into some stories of what we've experienced with wind on the job site. One that I think I might have told this story once before, but when I think the three of us were framing together, this was in
Culloden.
We were putting up exterior walls and I had a phone call. I had to call the lumberyard or something. And it was like a calm day. It wasn't a windy day. And it's weird. Maybe this is more common than I thought, but I think it is. But we've had several just like rogue gusts out of nowhere. Seemingly, like we had another few stories about this. But I was standing, I was on the phone and I was had my elbow in the window of this exterior wall we just stood. We had some braces on it. A gust of wind comes up, pushes the wall, pops the braces, and my first thought was to grab it to hold it up, but it's like a 50-foot long, 9-foot high wall, so I'm not stopping that. Wind blows it right off the side of the house. And fortunately, there was nobody down there. It was a walkout basement, so it's kind of a sloped landing spot for it. But it just fell off the side of the building and kind of floated, landed pretty soft. You know, a couple rocks punched some holes in the plywood, but it landed plywood side down and dropped down there anywhere from like, you know, 6 to 12 feet. And fortunately, we had a lumber delivery later that day, so we timed it with the truck when it was there, put some braces on it. The truck showed up to deliver our lumber. We grabbed some straps, strapped it back up, lifted it back up, put it back in its place.
Yeah, because it was a big boom truck.
Yeah, and we got away with that one just fine. We have showed up to a couple job sites after a weekend where we had flown trusses on a Friday and leaned trusses up in piles to spread them on Monday, and then we show up Monday morning and, you know, there's a dozen trusses that have flipped upside down. They're hanging from the top cords into the garage. We've had sheets. I remember that was another one. We sheeted a big roof in town here and I think we framed and sheeted the roof in a day or two. We just went crazy. Anyway, we were finishing off in the dark. Didn't get to do a final nail. We had the sheets all tacked and then windstorm. And we showed up early in the morning because we were all like, we knew the wind was howling. We're like, there's going to be sheets off the roof. And we're driving up the hill to see like, a bunch of sheets are missing.
And that was probably, realistically, before smartphones where you're like, hey, what's the weather doing tonight?
Yeah.
This was back when you had to phone Environment Canada weather forecast and listen to the robot guy tell you what the weather was doing. Mm-hmm. And so, because now it's the kind of thing where you can just check what's the weather doing and then you can kind of.
So I remember us going back up there and getting compressor set up, a guy on a stapler right away, and then like whatever, working in teams of two to wrangle sheets back onto the roof and fill in the holes. Fortunately, the ones that blew off didn't do any damage to the neighbor's house, or the fairly big property. But that was such a stressful, mm-hmm. that was gross.
Yeah.
It was terrible.
Another wind one, I would say recently, and both of us kind of experienced in the last 5 years, is when we redid our roofs and you have these huge chunks of metal, because we did our roofs ourselves. And so you have those, 16 inch?
Yeah.
And some of them would be 15, 20.
Long. Yeah, long sheets. Yep.
And the crappy thing about those is when the wind starts going, you're trying to like go with it, because if it creases, well, now you're, you know, so I'm sure all the roofers are like,
novice, yeah, butthead, exactly. Framers trying to roof. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was kind of sketchy. The one that had potentially the biggest consequence, you were there, mm-hmm. and that was just up here when we were building and we were spreading trusses, and we had there was like 6 or 8 trusses leaned up,
yep.
with a good amount of lean on them against a area that we'd finished. And we had guys on exterior walls to take those ends out. And I was walking interior walls, taking the center to King Post, mm-hmm. and we're shuffling along and we're spreading these trusses out. And again, calm day. And then out of nowhere, dirt is flying and this big gust comes out of nowhere.
Yep.
And all of a sudden, I think someone yelled.
Yep.
And I'm on interior walls and I become aware immediately. I'm like, the trusses behind me that are like 14 feet tall, there's the 5 that are left are falling towards me.
Yep.
And I'm on the interior walls inside.
Yeah, you have one path you can run. There's not...
Yeah.
You have to yep. run the longest.
Yeah, 2x2x4 wall with like a jog in it. And I'm like, I've got to haul ass that way as quick as I can and then run into those trusses before these come down and just pound me into the cap plate. And so I never saw them. I'm just like, I'm just going to move as quick as I can and I'm going to run along these walls. And I remember getting to the truss that I had to run into and literally grabbing the webs and arching my back. I'm like, I don't know how close they are, but I'm going to get out of the way as much as I can. So I grab the trusses, I'm running in, arch my back, I pull myself in and run into the trusses. And then bang, this huge crash of trusses landing on the wall. And I turn around to see the trusses down and I look up to you and the guys, everyone's eyes are just like wide-eyed saucers. So what did you see?
Like, I think it was like, even the way that you had to arch your back, like as the trusses came down, you arched enough for them to like just miss. And that was, again, I think where the good Lord was like, you're not going fast enough, little push. And you just, so like, is that would have been a spine removal.
Is this a case of that was the only route, or could you have just jumped down onto the floor?
That would not have been nearly as cool.
So I could have fully loaded the tool belt. I could have jumped off the walls from 9 feet up and like leapt off the side, hopefully quick enough. Yeah. But
I don't know what the floor layout was, but like grab onto a brace and swing down under a door.
It was, I mean, the quickest thing to me was run that way.
Yeah, yeah.
I still think it was the best decision. Again, you could have jumped off, but
just
think
braces
you were like,
and stuff. Yeah, I was just like,
if you had seen how close they were, I wonder if you would have jumped off.
I don't know, maybe, maybe, yeah.
So see, you just sensed it.
Spidey sense.
Yeah. Oof. Yeah, because all of a sudden it was just like there's excavators working nearby too, and I remember all of a sudden wind and like dirt flying. I was like, "What is going on?" I'm like, mm-hmm. "Oh, trusses are going to be coming." Off I went. Yeah. So that kind of leads me to my next point. So wind, super dangerous on a job site. You got to be careful. You got to be tacking your sheets down. I've seen 14-foot 2x6 plates flipping off lifts of lumber before. Like it can be crazy. Sheets of plywood for sure. You know, lifts of plywood can just get blown off like a deck of cards. So what we started doing, when we'd lean our trusses up, oftentimes what we do, we'd stack them, we'd toenail them all together and tack them to the truss they're leaning against so that there's something resisting them. But there's times where that's not enough. And if things get bumped, a 3-inch toenail kind of through there, maybe biting enough and it gets hit, the tail gets hit, they kind of stand up on their own. So after several years of the odd, misfortune of something falling over, being a close call, we just made it a rule with our crew, no more leaning trusses. You put them right tight against the other truss and you put a 2x4 block and you sink nails straight in over top. And we'd leave them sticking out, 3/8, 1/4 inch. You can still pull them, but there's a nail vertically. You got to shear the nail off for that truss to come off of there. Mm-hmm. And that became our practice and our company kind of regulation. Because we thought we had done a good job lots of times and stuff had gone sideways.
Yeah.
You know, the proof of concept was not there. Mm-hmm.
You underestimate surface area and how much something invisible can push.
Like, well, it's, that makes me think of the urban legend, the guy who fell off the roof with a sheet of plywood in his hands.
Oh, yes.
And did the whole like float to safety.
Yeah.
True? Well, I don't know. I'm curious.
I am. I'm too.
Because really again, curious. I heard it as if it was a legit thing. And I don't know what version you guys heard. Mine was, he was like in like a more like a skyscraper thing. And he went out, fell, and then came back into the
a floor or two down.
Didn't go all the way down the ground. I don't know.
I don't know.
I mean, you picture it as like a guy floats out back into the building. No, not a chance. But you go out, let's say you go out, you stumble out, you got a sheet. And you drift, you know, a couple feet away from the building, and then it angles just enough to get momentum going back, and you kind of catch a railing a big and gust grab comes a hold, up.
Like some kind of up like miraculous updraft that is able to.
But you think of the amount of force that wind applies; it's like this invisible juggernaut running around your site, pushing on everything, and it's like a whole team of them.
Yeah,
you know, so you got braces up, but there's like literally, if you could imagine the amount of force, like pushing and just. Mm-hmm. Yanking things around all the time. It's
like Selzy's place on the thing there, like with that huge deck and roof that goes up, like that sail there, and the amount of hurricane protection that he'd need on there to not.
Well, that was an interesting thing too. Through our building was, you know, with all the engineers that we work with and these huge connections and shear strength. One of the biggest things that they started really working on the last several years we were building was uplift and holding houses down. Mm-hmm. And I mean. It was actually frustrating and comical to the degree that they would take it sometimes. And they would be talking about, we're calculating our wind loads, you know, for the 100-year storm and the gust that can come up, to the degree that, you know, if the house is facing the wrong direction and the garage door is open and that once in 100 or 200-year gust comes up into the garage could lift off the ground and blow away. I'm like, okay, let's calm down a little.
Yeah.
You know, but we got to the point where we're having to use structural screws and, you know, a lot of places they wanted us to put hurricane straps from exterior walls, overflow system to other exterior walls to tie it all down. Mm-hmm. You know, big apartments, they've got big hold down hardware that runs through to the foundation. And those all, you know, I got on paper that kind of makes sense, but you put a strap on the outside or what? Okay, here's a really popular one. Guys will build their bottom floor walls. They'll leave a foot of sheathing off at the top. They'll put their floor system on. They won't sheet the floor system. They'll build their upper floor walls and leave the sheathing up a foot. And then what they'll do towards the end of the job is they'll think, now I'm going to do hurricane protection. I'm going to sheet around this whole perimeter of the house and span from wall over floor system into wall to tie it down and nothing can ever uplift. Mm-hmm. Well, my personal opinion, and this is a point of contention with certain people and builders and engineers, is that is a terrible, terrible idea because homes are heavy, wood compresses, moisture changes, and they settle. And there was places that we built in Edmonton where there was a five-story wood frame apartment, and there was an original wing that was done, a phase that was done. 2 years later, we came back to build the other side. So we get up to the third or fourth floor and building right against the side of the building that's a couple years older that has stucco on it and roofing and everything. And I bet you we were like an inch and a quarter above the floor of the older building by the time we built our structure up there. Mm. By the time we got our roof on, it was like it was all compressing and settling down. So there's a major problem with like, yes, it sounds fine to do hurricane protection, hold things down with plywood or steel straps and banding, but you end up actually, then if you sheet that whole side of the wall before that there's been any settling happening, well now as the lumber shrinks and dries, there's actually gaps between your studs and your plates and your plywood, and you're actually carrying the load on your plywood. Mm-hmm. Like that's what's carrying it. So what I ended up talking to my engineers, I'm like, I don't want to do it that way. We want to sheet our wall as its own unit, sheet the floor system as its own unit, sheet the upper wall as its own unit. There's room for compression to happen. Mm-hmm. And we ended up then doing structural screws through the bottom plate into rim board or joist and like fastening everything down internally. So there's room for some movement. It's still held down.
Oh, wait a second. I mean, we get some gusts as we've described, but we're not in hurricane country.
Mm-hmm. No.
So the 100-year storm. Okay, I get that. And the only reason I get it is because last time we lived in Summerland, we had a 100-year storm. Mm-hmm. And it, everybody was saying it was because of the rain, not because of the because of the wind. And there was a waterfall off Giant's Head. Oh, multiple.
Yeah.
And for those that don't know, Giant's Head is like the main, what do we call this? It used to be a volcano in kind of the central part of Summerland. It's like this landmark, big, we live on the side of it. And the rain was so intense. And the only reason I bring this up is because on my house, when we were building our houses in the cul-de-sac, mm-hmm. the engineering of like the water drainage and everything was, everybody kept saying, we're doing this, it's overkill, yep, but for that 100-year storm. And so I remember standing in the cul-de-sac deliberately during the 100-year storm, watching the water and being like, is it doing its job? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And even because some of the stuff I had to do in my yard for drainage was the engineer was not around. And so I had to do like rock pits and different things. Mm-hmm. And I remember walking around doing my little inspection because it's awesome. Like here's a 100-year event. I want to see if we did the job.
Yeah.
And my yard was totally great. But the neighbor behind me, there was a waterfall off our property into their yard. And I don't think they were okay. Mm-hmm. Which seems to be the very extent of the engineering is it's just looking at this area, not necessarily the property next door. Mm-hmm. But we're not necessarily hurricane country. I'd be curious to hear what, because you watch those videos of hurricanes and there's doesn't matter what you do, stuff's blowing everywhere.
Yeah,
like Florida, you know, New Jersey, some of these other places that have like full on proper hurricanes and, you know, New Orleans, all these different, you know, I'm curious if the code is just ridiculous there. Cause it's like, we're not looking about the 100-year storm. We're looking like what's coming next month.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know it's crazy.
There's so many houses up on stilts. The ocean that floods over and.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. Okay. So I think we've exhausted the wind discussion.
What is the Windy City? What state? What?
Chicago.
Chicago. Right. The Windy City. Right.
There you go.
Never been. I would say Lethbridge. Yep. Some people refer to it as Lethbridge, but you don't trust those people.
No, Chicago. That's where the.
Okay, so let's kind of tear through a few of these in a bit of a hurry, because we've spent a long time on wind. So a few really obvious ones in regards to tools. So nailers, pneumatic spikers.
Shot myself.
Yeah, you had.
Have you?
We went right through here, didn't you?
Yep. Have you shot yourself?
No.
You?
Yes.
You haven't.
I have not.
Mm-mm. Virgins for shooting yourself.
So unheard of. So rare.
A skilled green worker.
Okay, there. Yeah.
Yeah, you are a skilled green worker.
Never shot myself.
Yeah. But I would say when it comes to the nailer and shooting yourself, my experience of shooting myself, it comes down to always, of course, being in a hurry. And it happened to me in the morning. So I was still a bit foggy, you know, rush off to work, got to nail the rim board on. And then it's holding down the trigger on the nailer, reaching further than is braced and pulling towards myself. So my posture, like now when I would do it, I would situate myself along the rim board to be parallel with it more. Mm-hmm. And that way, if the nailer skips, which is what happened, you go bup up at the bottom and then bup up on the top cord of the truss, nailing the rim board in. And so it was at the top where I go bup up that I just came up a little too high and the edge of the rim board caught the guard on the nailer and the nail was able to scoot across. And I had my hand on the joist like that. Yep. And so the nail went into my hand and it went, thankfully, through the meat into the center of my hand. And of course it was a stupid boss stitch nailer. So they have the little steel barbs than the paper. And so it goes in and it's just the head sticking out. And all I remember was like, just that.
Slap on the hand.
And then I go, oh. And then I remember grabbing it and be like, wiggle, wiggle. And I could see the nail going like this inside. I'm like, oh no. And then it was the whole to the hospital and you're just waiting and you're just, it's not like I was in agony. Mm-hmm. You're just sitting there waiting for the doctor to come look. And I remember the doctor, pretty small guy. And he's looking at it and he puts the needle in. And I know that was the worst part, was the needle. Like waiting as it goes right in the hole and he's trying to numb it up. And then he's like, okay, I'll be right back. He leaves and a big guy comes in with pliers. And I'm like, oh, here we go. And he held down my arm and ripped it out. But I remember Jules shooting himself in the ankle through the CSA triangle. Just and he said they couldn't even, with two guys, couldn't even get it out.
No kidding.
And we're just reefing and reefing and reefing.
Was it like a ring nail or did it have the wires?
Well, what happens is your muscles like contract around it.
Sure.
And so the longer it takes for them to get at the nail, potentially, and I don't know, maybe paramedics could help me out, but the longer you wait to get it out, I think the more tense it can get around the nail. So, yeah. But that was my one experience with hitting myself.
I'm curious what the number, the percentage of, if you are a career construction framer,
yep.
What do you think the...
99.9% of guys shoot themselves.
Yep.
Like of all my interactions and discussions through social media, talk, everyone's like, everybody has shot themselves.
Well,
and like Joe Canning, you end up seeing this one, Joe. I know he's like, when they talk about, he's shot himself dozens of times. He's like, I know one guy.
Well, would you say, just off the top of your head, what would be the primary reason people shoot themselves? Mm-hmm. Because I have a story for you.
Okay.
So I think in my experience, it's nailing towards myself, you know, not positioning yourself. Like when you're taught to frame up a wall, you're thinking those things through. Like the nailer is going to miss and you're going to shoot a nail towards yourself. So make sure your hands are away, your feet are away and all that. But you can't always control what someone else is doing with their nailer, which is this story. Guy walks up a set of stairs or a ladder. And I know this because my brother-in-law is a paramedic and he came on the scene for this. Guy came up a ladder and someone was nailing as he was coming up. I can't remember all how it happened, but the guy had his finger on the trigger and was like moving as the guy was coming up and the nailer hits him in the head.
Shoots a spike into his head.
Well, there was a contact and the guy was like, whoa, what was that?
So guy's up a ladder or something, guy walks underneath and just brushed the
he gun. Was coming up a ladder or something and there was contact to the nailer in the guy's head. And the guy holding the nailer, white as a ghost, he goes to tell his supervisor, I just shot so-and-so in the head. And so the supervisor comes, and the guy who got shot in the head is just sitting there, like, I'm fine. There's nothing. I'm fine. And the guy who shot him is like, please go to the hospital. Mm-hmm. So they call the paramedics, and he's just like horrified. The guy who shot him has to go home. He's so shaken up.
Yeah.
He's like, I've shot him in the head.
Yeah, he's in worse shape than the other guy.
The guy who got shot in the head is like, what? And so my brother-in-law, he's the guy who shows up at the ambulance and they show up and they're like, what are you, you got shot in the head? And they're trying to sort out what happened. Okay. And they like do their thing and take him to the hospital and they're waiting.
Like no blood.
Yeah. And they're waiting with the guy like, oh. And so the guy gets admitted. And so once the doctors at the hospital, right, can take the patient in, the paramedics can leave. And they're driving away and they're like, I gotta know what the end of the story is. What, did he get shot or not? Mm-hmm. And so they park and he runs in. And the nurses and doctors are just about, you know, they're in the X-ray room and they're doing their whole thing. And they're literally putting the X-ray on the whatever they do, right?
Light board.
The light. And just as they do that is when my brother walks in and it's just a chorus of holy. And he has a spike into his brain. It's gone through his skull and into his brain. And so my brother and I standing there looking at this X-ray of literally the spike in his head. Mm-hmm. And he carried on. And we don't know what happened after the fact. So you're left with, did he make it?
My goodness.
That's a terrible story. That's a terrible story.
No, it's a good story because Brad.
They probably rusted in his brain and he died.
You horrible. And I can control how we hold the nailer for when we're nailing.
Right.
But you can't control someone else that you're working with.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, I mean, that happened in Edmonton with us again, nailing, guy nailing rim board. I think it was Matt.
Yeah.
Working with Matt.
Yeah.
We're nailing sheathing to the outside of the floor system.
Yeah.
And Matt's got the stapler and he's going,
yes,
raking up the outside, nailing real quick. And a guy named Rick is walking across the floor, maybe 30 feet away. And Matt's doing this and he'd same thing, depress the guard, fires a staple over the floor. And I was a little ways away, just enough to be seeing Matt. And I see Rick go like this. And he's like, oh. And I go over and he's got two holes right here. And he's bleeding out of his chin. And he was just behind Matt as he's stapling. And he saw this little glimmer, this little flash, just because something was coming out of his face. And he lifted his head up and it stuck him in the chin. He had these two, like bit by a snake and stuck him in the face. Yeah.
Because the thing is, when you shoot, like we used to shoot in high level, we used to try to shoot big bugs with the nailer. Yeah. But so often it flips in the air.
Yeah, yeah.
So that I'm shocked that it was able to.
I know.
I heard of a guy actually who, with like a hammer tacker.
Oh, here we go.
It's
you gotta watch out for
one of his good friends, and like sunk a staple straight into a poor guy's leg. I don't know who would do that.
I have to defend myself. It was an accident, mind you. I was being foolish.
An accident.
I was literally not trying to hit him in the shins. But here was happening. Luke never mentions, and probably will still deny it. I was merely responding with the hammer. We were doing flooring, and so we must have been doing the underlay or something like that, tacking it down. And often, well, I shouldn't say often, sometimes there would be a threat. Just a little like, oh, I'm going to hit you with a hammer tacker. Oh, not really. But just enough to get you to be like, and move out of the way and, you know, just be annoying.
Yeah.
And so that's all I was doing was like, And then as he stepped forward and I came forward, it hit. And immediately I was like,
I feel terrible.
And then, but at the same time, it was kind of funny. And then it wasn't funny when he's like, it's in my leg and it's curled around and he couldn't get it out because the staple had like bent over.
So that's not how I remember it. So here's my recollection.
Here we go.
We pranked each other regularly. There's all kinds of ways that there's more of this that'll come up.
Right. But I would like to make this qualifier. Out of all the things we've done to each other.
That was minor.
Minor. And secondly, who's been hurt the most?
I won the game. You did.
Exactly. I lost on a regular basis. So I can actually say after you add them all up.
Yeah.
And you like the blood count, the stuff in the eyes, the amount of times you get hit in the nuts, snot on you, all those things. Who's the loser? Me.
Yeah, fair enough.
So
no, that's fair enough.
Okay,
fair enough.
Here's my recollection of the story.
Sure.
Was that I had it coming for sure. I'd done something to deserve it. But my recollection is that you came at me with the hammer tacker and I had knee pads on.
Yes. Right.
And you were trying to hit me on the knee pad.
That's correct. Yes.
Okay. So he's like coming at my legs, like, oh crap, he's gonna hit me. And he goes like to take a confident swing to hit my knee pad. And of course I'm like, ugh, I move, and he just like chunk into the meat of this, you know, inside of my shin. And I don't remember it bending over, but I remember being like, you hit me. And I look and all I see is the crown of the staple flush with my flesh.
Yeah.
I remember like, ow. And then just took my fingernail and popped it out. And we had a good hard laugh. And like, I'm sorry.
That sounds all right. Cause again, it's a little bit of your fault if he was going for the, cause that would have been harmless if it was in the knee or in the pad.
Yeah.
But I was going to say to Bob or Steve, Carl, whatever the guy's name is, that got the nail in the head. I am curious if you know this guy or if you happen to be listening, seriously, reach out to Acrobus, to Luke, through Instagram or whatever means, and let us know, like, did they take it out? You know, and I mean, again, you know, sorry if it didn't turn out too well, but
That's somber.
That is a little somber, but I'm really curious to know. Is he, cause surely that story goes a long way. There has got to be a ton of people
of those stories. Like I've heard of ones of roofers fooling around, shooting nails at each other, and then they go to the bar for a drink after. Like, buddy can't take his hat off because there's like a nail through his hat. You know, and they're shorter nails. It's not going to kill you, but it's like literally like sunk into his skull enough. You're like,
Yeah. Oh. And they put those in by hand.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So nailers are dangerous. Okay. One more follow up on that. I have never shot myself in the hand. I've had nails curl right around my finger. That was something that happened once. I hit a knot and it came around and I adjusted my technique after that. Mm-hmm. I taught my guys how to nail in a way that you minimize the chance of being punctured. Chad, though, I remember he was at one point, one of my lead framers, he was framing up walls in his early days and he was straddling the stud, reaching forward, nailing towards himself. And he managed to depress the guard, hit a knot, something, nail shoots over the plate, tumbles and slaps him on the shin. This is in the summertime, he's wearing shorts. And he's got an imprint of a spike on his shin.
Wow.
And it looked hilarious. Wow. And he came in and showed us, we all had a good laugh. Like 15 minutes later, comes over, another one, like a couple inches away, happened to him twice. So he learned his lesson. Again, didn't get punctured, but he had these like nail imprints on both sides of his
leg.
What are
the chances?
And then the closest call I ever had, that could have been really bad, was my early days framing at Edmonton. We'd put a floor system on. We hadn't sheeted it yet. And I was volunteered to go and throw a handrail up around the stairwell opening. So I'm standing on joists. I'm fairly new to it. I'm putting posts up and I'm throwing 2x4s around and you're standing there and trying to reach around a nail. And I was in a bit of a hurry and I was not thinking too clear and I was somewhat green. And I remember standing.
And unskilled.
Unskilled. Standing in this awkward position where the post that I'd nailed to the rim board sticking up, I was actually leaning against it. And I'm like, I got nowhere to do this. I'm in this awkward position. Grabbed the 2x4, pulled against the post, nailed towards myself.
Oh no.
And because the post wasn't right against my chest and it would flex, it
oh, yeah.
bump fired.
Yep. Yeah.
So it was like, yeah. I bet you four or five nails, I just pumped into that lap joint.
Yikes.
And the post is like slapping me in the chest.
Jeez.
Just nailing. And it was like, as it's happening, my eyes were just bugging out of my head because I couldn't stop it. I'm like, it's all rattling around.
Because you get tense and it makes it worse.
Oh my goodness. And I remember like getting away from it and being like, I nearly just sunk like 6 nails right into my chest with a spiker.
Yeah.
Like so stupid.
That reminds me of when you tried to shoot a rock out of the water balloon launcher when you were a kid. We had two of us are holding, you know, those things from back in the day, the big, huge stretchy bands. We got two of us kids stretching. There's Luke's on his butt on the grass, pulling it as far as possible. Like, well, let's just try to wing a rock out there.
This is going
to
end well.
Yeah. Probably the size of a pool ball.
Yeah. And he just stretches this thing back as far as he can, lets it go. It flips over.
It tangled in a little basket or something. Yep.
And it comes back and it launches straight back and hit you. Isn't it right in the chest?
Right in the chest. Yeah, just nailed me.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
and you, yeah, that was,
that was
dangerous. Yeah.
That was scary. We did that at camp with a big water balloon launcher. Same thing. Get two people to hold either ends and one person pulls back. And so at the time, the program director was like, this is going to be a good idea. Let's get to play a game. We're up on a hill and we're lobbing these into the crowd of kids while they're trying to storm the castle. It was the game we were playing or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so the first one, he's like, yeah, this is going to be so awesome. Launch. And Megan was actually huffing it across the field. Dunk. Takes her out and she's like, bawling. And oh, this is a bad idea. Because the balloon didn't break. It just was like, boom. Just from that kind of force, takes her off her feet and just.
That's like when I think it was the three of us, we were playing Frisbee. There's a few of us down to the lake in 7 years ago. And this is, Ben was probably like 3 years old. But it's like dad's whipping Frisbees across this big, huge field. And Ben just comes out of nowhere just to go see you. And one of those things, you're like, no, no, no. And I had just whipped this Frisbee. And Ben just like turns around and I just collect all of his teeth. Just boom, head snaps back. And he's on the ground. You come running over. And I think you had to do more caring for me because I was so bad that I just absolutely annihilated your poor son. But
That's
now he's getting married this year.
That's Jeez. Right.
What a big boy, and he's got all his teeth.
Well, no, he doesn't.
Oh.
Because on Bender, he was riding his bike. He was riding his bike. Classic kid move, right? He was like 12. And he goes to the corner store with his buds, gets the goodies, right? You're riding back with your pop and chips and whatever. And he can't hold it all. So he's got one hand with the bag of chips and one hand on the bar. and he's trying to like feed himself chips.
While he's riding.
Yeah, while he's riding. So he's like, chips, chips. And the handle that he's got his hand on, of course, is the front wheel brake. Mm-hmm. And so he's going for the chips and his buddy in front stops and he doesn't notice. And he's like, huh? Grabs the brake, boom, goes over the handlebars, face plant on the cement, knocks a tooth out. Mm. And there's blood everywhere. Mm. And so someone comes running, one of his buddies comes running back to the camp. They're like, yeah, Ben hurt himself. And we're like, uh-oh, what, this could be horrible. And so we get there and his whole face is just torn apart and he's missing a tooth in the front. Mm. And we didn't know at the time, but apparently if this happens, you're supposed to take the tooth, lick it off, put it back in.
So and it could reattach.
Oh, that's the best thing to do.
Yeah.
Is to just quickly lick it off, get all the grime off.
Yep.
And then hold on, kid. Your face is totally mangled. There's blood everywhere, and you're crying, and you got a hole, an open hole in your face. And I'm just gonna shove this tooth in that super sensitive hole. Just hold still.
Yeah.
That's what you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
I don't know if I could do it.
That's like James, my brother-in-law, got the hockey puck to the teeth a few years ago. He went to
a guy
was doing like a slap shot or a wrist shot, and he went to like kind of block it.
Oh, classic.
And the classic just like rolled up his stick straight into the teeth.
Ah.
And all of his front teeth all got pushed way in. So it didn't knock them out, but just like obviously closes his mouth and it's just a saucepan.
Bent all
blood
teeth
in. Oh, yeah. They're all sick. Caved in. And so he didn't, you know, so he went to the dentist, and the dentist basically, I think, just grabs all them, pulls them all back forward, wow, and then reefs them back up into the mouth and basically said, we'll just see which ones live and whatever ones don't, we'll replace. And I think that's what ended up happening. So
they made it.
Yeah. Oh, so bad.
But that the bike riding, what's the favorite? It's one of your favorite movie scenes, delivering newspapers on the bike. I can't think of what movie it was.
I don't remember.
What's the scene?
Describe it. I'm trying to
remember. Catch up it's just like, it's just one of those like in between movie scene shots where it's like between scenes. It's just this guy riding down this nice neighborhood delivering papers, and he goes to deliver one and he whips it and he turns the
front thing
and just absolutely goes on his face.
I can't remember. The only one that comes to mind was from Multiplicity, and the stupid copy Michael Keaton's character at the end closing credits is throwing pizza boxes from his bike.
But, but he actually said newspapers.
I know. Yeah. That's the only thing. So I'm sorry. I can't deliver on
that.
What's
next on your list? We're taking a long time. We've got to fly through these.
Next one is circular saws. So that's obviously, you know, So, I mean, circular saws are like our most used tool on the job site, and they take practice and skill to get used to. And, you know, new guys with them aren't aware of the kickback and how they pull and different things. I know for me, one thing I had to be careful with was, you know, which I don't do very often, was actually blocking the guard open for doing plunge cuts. Mm-hmm. And you can like take your carpenter's pencil and stuff it in the little lever, and you can actually hold the guard back. So if you're doing a whole bunch of cuts, because oftentimes you're having to pull the guard to start an angled cut, and if you just block it open, then it's way, way, way easier. But the thing is, when you rarely do that, and you're so accustomed to setting the saw down,
mm-hmm,
and usually our saws, they would come with a brake on them, but then that would wear out and they would just spool it down on their own. Once you've got that guard blocked, you forget the blade's still spinning and you set it down. Well, bloody thing runs across the floor.
Sorry,
and
when you say
cords.
The guard blocked.
Yeah. So when you open the guard, you can stick a pencil in behind the little lever and it'll hold the guard up out of the way. So then you've got
an open
blade.
I never did that. I've actually, interesting.
So crazy through Instagram, I've become aware of some guys who actually on their circular saws, they remove the blade, pardon me, the guard. They take the blade off entirely.
The guard.
And they say, like, they remove the guard entirely.
It's so hard to cut.
Yeah. And so they remove the guard entirely and put an oversized blade on it so they can cut deeper. So you can put, you know, these great big blades on these small saws.
Which you have done. Not that you haven't taken off the guard.
No guards, but I've put bigger blades on saws. But these guys will put like a big blade on this small saw. And to do that, you got to remove the guard because otherwise the blade won't, it'll bottom out in the channel. And then you've got this like open blade circular saw.
That's ridiculous.
And you got to be super, I'm like, it's so Western. It's scary. Yeah. So the other thing that we'd happen to with us, like I had a couple, you know, 8 1/4 DeWalt heavy duty saws with the depth adjustment knob on the front, super torquey, really powerful saws. And I'd put 8.5-inch blades in them because I could cut 3 1/8 inches deep. And I'd use that for cutting all my plates, 2-ply plates. And the issue with that saw is it had a ton of torque to it. And if you had a bind when you're cutting plates, that thing would kick back and the back edge of the shoe would just nail you in the forearm. That was one of those things, like there was a variety of things that would just make you kind of rage. That was one that would
picture that.
Put me over the, you know, the deep end immediately. Yep. You're like trying to be quick and efficient. Guys are framing and cutting and you're like, I gotta get plates cut and laid out. And you got one and you know there's a bit of a knot or a bit of tension in the lumber and you're cutting through and all of a sudden, and you have no warning. It's just like you're cutting fine. All of a sudden, and then bang, that thing would kick up and an aluminum blade or bar, shoe would just smash you. It would, it was brutal. So I hated that. But as far as like, you know, things where you'd see people have issues with saws, oftentimes they're like, they're holding the material funny and they're cutting over top or they're using their foot as a cantilever. And there's ways you can do all those things that are safe and fine. Sure. But when someone's new and they see a veteran,
they're cutting between two saw horses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The pinch.
And
then it,
And that was a common one. Like I love cutting on saw horses, but I would take the new guys. Okay. I need to set up saw horses and lumber for my cutting station. Mm-hmm. Do not put the horses farther apart than 5.5 feet because I use like 14 foot material and everything is guaranteed to like be flexing out. If you put them 8 feet apart and there's a bow in the middle, it's going to be binding all day long and we're going to lose our mind.
That's a scary mistake to make too when you're like falling trees and you're bucking everything up, you know, and sometimes there's like a branch on the ground that's pushing it the opposite way or something that you don't realize. Those are tree fallers. Scary. I'm sure they have all kinds of binding stories.
So, I mean, a skill saw is incredibly, a circular saw, I should say. So for those of you watching and listening, to be clear, skill saw is a brand. The tool is actually a circular saw.
That's the distinction. Different than the square saw. It's not like a...
Shut up.
That would be good, a square saw.
That would be a mortising drill.
Got it.
To cut square holes.
Yes.
Yep. So let's go. So, I mean, saws again, skill saws, circular saws, super versatile, great tool in the hands of people who are, have the skill to use them. If you're a novice, if you're new to it, be very, very careful, get comfortable with it before you start doing things you see veterans do.
One that I really enjoy is either a reciprocating saw or a jigsaw when you're in a hurry and you kind of get it into a spot where, especially with a reciprocating saw, you're, because it's always demo. So you're always like booting stuff around and being rough. And the classic is like, you don't realize that the blade has come out. And so, cause it's doing this and it comes out and then it's all, and then just leaves a whole like track of bites into the, whatever you're doing.
Oh. It's usually once you put a brand new blade in and it comes out and then it all bends. And
The blade bends. You're like,
you get the pliers out and you're trying to.
But it never can be straight again. And it's always like, like
in
this.
The same vein though, the tool that I wish I knew about back then was that it's not a reciprocating. What's the little.
Oscillating.
What an awesome tool.
Whoa. Well, nice.
For real though. Like that I have one of those now. I use it for so many things and it is so handy.
Wait, when you say oscillating, what are you talking about?
So. Basically, so I saw for the first time, it was actually Sean, my plumber years ago, brought it to the job site. So basically it's a tool that looks, it's got the body of like an angle grinder.
Okay. Yep.
And then what attaches to it is these little rectangular blade, and it goes onto the bottom and it shakes back and forth.
Oh yeah.
And
oh yeah.
But it only moves maybe, I don't know.
Like what we would call, but when we were doing flooring.
An undercut saw?
Yeah.
Sort of. But instead of it being a cut from the side, this one is just plunges straight in.
Yes, I know what you're talking about.
So those you can just amazing. Like plunge straight in. So when I first saw that, I'm like, this is a magical tool.
It is magical.
This is unreal. I can just plunge straight in.
Yeah.
Like what's the other alternative to doing that? Like trying to chisel?
Drilling a hole and then getting your jigsaw in the whole thing to be able to do those type of type of cuts. And then and they have all different types of ends on them, like rounded ones and then like.
Yeah. So great tool. They're actually quite dangerous though too, because they will just cut straight into anything you touch them to.
Yeah.
So I've heard of several good injuries from them.
Yeah.
You guys being a little bit careless handling them. Super, super cool. And that whole reality of reciprocating sawzalls.
They also call them saber saws, don't they?
Saber saws, different brands. They come out of the kerf you're cutting in and they just run across whatever. Mm-hmm. Actually, our friend Jared, that was a guest on here a few episodes ago, he had a bad run-in with a
Sawzall?
Sawzall, and messed up his hand really bad. I think it jumped out of a hole and ran onto his hand or his fingers. It's brutal.
Sick.
Yeah, so keep a good grip. Be aware of your the kerf and all that stuff. Okay. Potentially the most dangerous tool that tradesmen use with some of the biggest consequences.
Table saw.
Table saw.
Of course.
Phenomenal tool. Such a great, versatile tool, but my goodness, so many, because they work so effortlessly, so smoothly, and then things like, in the flash of an eye,
moment when you're on the table saw, because we used to use ours pretty dangerously, but we were used to it.
Yep.
Like,
no guards, right?
Right.
Just free.
No lots guard of free handing. Yep.
Yeah, free handing. So no fence, you know, we're doing flooring, so you're cutting out for a vent or something. It's that moment, especially with hardwood, where you're like going through and you're watching, you're trying to be as safe as you can, as square as you can. But as soon as you tilt it either way, it can grab. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But that moment when you're like, oh, you can feel the tension change
and
you're
it.
Sweating and
yes.
you're
like, oh,
don't move. keep it square. You can do
get
it.
Get away. Yeah.
What do? I want to get out. I want to bail. And then sometimes I like move my knee and hit the switch on the table saw to shut it off, and then you wait until it calms down. You're like, how do I get through
that's
this?
That's so true.
So sweaty.
And now they have, though, luckily, well, before I get to that, would you say that the table saw is the number one tool of construction, of building, of any type of?
I mean, I would say like for concrete and forming and framing, we don't use a table saw that often.
Sure.
There is time and a place where it was super, super handy and that we're definitely justified to pull it out. But usually you're just using a circular saw.
Sure.
But as far as a tool that can have the biggest, most severe impact in the shortest amount of time and can be misused. I mean, to be clear, everybody, what he described about freehanding a table saw, not recommended.
No.
However, we did a ton of flooring and you learn to use that tool in that manner. It's incredibly accurate, incredibly fast. And you can do it in ways that, you know, even if things do bind and pinch, you're out of harm's way. Nothing terrible is going to happen. But incredibly, incredibly useful tool. So yeah, in regards to, you know, in just general carpentry, yes, it's an incredibly useful saw that you use a ton.
I was thinking though of the, I'm sure you guys have seen it, the hot dog.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
I love it. I just say hot dog. Yes. I've seen it.
Where your skin touches the blade and it dies.
And it dies.
Yeah.
Without even like, but it doesn't it destroy the motor or
the original ones, it was a pretty big deal. Like you almost had to get a new saw, but the newer ones now, it's like this whole cartridge that you can easily replace. And it basically like it detects any kind of a ground, I think of an electrical current. So it can sense that. And then, it basically throws a hunk of aluminum into the saw immediately and just jams it, stopped. So they're pretty cool. Yeah.
But I had never worked, so I was familiar with how we would use a table saw. But when I went and worked in a finishing carpentry shop, man, those big shop style panel table saws are so awesome. Yeah. And you don't have, remember the nonsense of our rinky dink little Ryobi table saw, the little cheap little guy that's on the little legs, and you got it kind of cockeyed on a hill and you're like, I got to cut this sheet of plywood all by myself. And you're like, and it's just throwing things everywhere. You're like, just trying to fight it through. Miserable. Yeah. But then in a workshop, it's like this super wide table. You got all this room, all these arms, just slide it through perfectly square. I'm like, wow, this is nice.
Yeah. And that's a big reality too, is it being aware of the tool you're using, because you can manhandle a little tiny, job site table saw, almost like a skill saw. Like they're light and gutless and you can overwhelm them and just plug them up. You use a panel saw in a cabinet shop, you're throwing, a 1-inch in diameter piece of oak through a cinder block wall with that sucker if that kicks back. Like it's a completely
that
different
kickback
animal.
That kickback is also terrifying.
Yeah.
I've been hit in the gut by a piece of walnut when we were doing flooring and stuff. Yikes. Yeah. And then you get out of the way and that's not better because you're like, what did it hit behind me?
Yeah.
Or like someone walking by and they're out cold because they got hit by that little piece of flooring that they're trying to cut. Because you had some doozies with the kickback on a...
Yeah, I had one. Yeah, I've got slightly modified fingertips.
But no, that's not the one I'm talking about. Like boards hitting you.
Yeah. Well, that was the same time. I got
twice.
I got bagged at the same time as getting my fingers nicked.
Yeah.
That was not a good day.
No, but we've talked about them.
Yeah. Okay. A few other non-tool related dangers on the site, I think, that are worth talking about. Naivety, I think, mm-hmm. is a huge one. You get brand new green guys that just aren't aware of the environment. And like when I'd hire new people, I'd be like, one of the biggest things I need you to work on is your awareness. Mm-hmm. Look around, pay attention, communicate with people. Don't assume anything. You have people who just walk in straight into trouble because they just have no clue. Like mm-hmm. it's a super, especially, super dangerous thing.
Especially around equipment.
Yeah.
Like forklifts, zoom booms.
Yep.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which, super, super dangerous.
I don't want to derail you, but talking about zoom booms and forklifts and stuff, how we used to use those back in the day and how you use them now, there's a lot of danger there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And especially when you're on the zoom, because I used to drive the zoom boom sometimes at work, and you know, when you're getting used to it and you don't quite have the outriggers set right, or you zoom up, you boom out too far and you're starting to tip. Mm-hmm. Like there's just so many things that you just got to learn the subtleties of it.
Or when you're boomed all the way out, you're up in the little metal cage there and you've got the one and you're driving with it from up there and you go over that yes. like 1-inch bump. Yes. And it hits you forward and you yeah. smash into the steel cage.
Yes.
But I mean, again, how many videos of it online you see guys getting sent
launched
out of those things 30 feet up in the air?
Yeah.
It's unreal.
It's ridiculous.
But you're right. The awareness of not just the like bullseye of what you're doing, mm-hmm. but the perimeter beyond and being able to be aware.
Sure.
Yeah, that's huge. Some other ones that are kind of, you know, more characteristics of personality that are very dangerous. Pride can mm-hmm. be a big one. You know, someone who's like, I don't want to look like I don't know what I'm doing, so I'm just going to go into this full steam ahead and do something that's either dangerous mm-hmm. Or they haven't thought through all the way, trying to impress their coworkers. Like, I can walk up there. I can do that. I can handle it. I've done it before.
Give me that. And then they yep. carry it up the ladder.
Yeah. And they go for it. So that, which can lead to that kind of overconfidence. Like there's a fine line between having the willingness and confidence and bravery to like take something on new that you mm-hmm. haven't done before and learn the lessons as you go. And that can suddenly slip into completely unsafe, mm-hmm. naive trouble that you just, it can be.
I think I remember you, I don't know if you, I want to say you did let him go. It was a new guy and there was a bunch of concrete and all these steps. Man. And it's that overconfidence, and he's yep. like a young athletic. Yep. Like it was impressive.
Yep.
But he just like launches off.
How yeah, tell that- it. So we were snapping out a foundation, and the foundation went from like 10 foot wall down to like 5 foot wall, and then down to his walkout basement, and then down to the slab on grade. And we're snapping out, and I had this guy, I won't say his name, had him walking. He was up top, and he was only with me for a few days, but he's a fit athletic guy. He's one of those guys who's like in it to win it. Yeah. That was his thing. In it to win it. All good. He just go for it 100% all the time. You're like, just calm down. Learn our process. I know you've done some of this before, but just take it easy. And so we're snapping out, and he had walked to the end of this wall to snap a line, and we'd snapped it down the vertical side or something. And I go, come on down here and we'll carry on. Well, he just walks into the wall just seconds after I say it and just jumps from the 10-foot, this is 8-inch thick wall with level strips. So it's 7 1/4 inches wide, with anchor bolts sticking up everywhere. Mm-hmm. And he just like nothing, parkour guy, just steps off, jumps from the 10-foot high foundation down to the 5-foot. So it's a 5-foot drop, you know, it's a decent little height. Mm-hmm. And he just sticks the landing. He's wearing shorts and work boots and, you know, whatever, t-shirt, sticks the landing and then just hops down. Okay, really impressive. Mm-hmm. I would never ever do that. Impressive physically and his confidence to do it. But I was like, don't ever do that again. What do you mean? I'm in it to win it. I'm like, I couldn't care less if that's your ability. It's impressive physically.
Yeah.
But there are circumstances that could take place that you aren't in control of. What if your shoelace was hooked on an anchor bolt up there?
Yeah.
All of a sudden, no problem. Oh, crap. And you come down sideways and you land on top of anchor bolts that are sticking up 4 inches and you're punctured now by 5/8 anchor bolts, greasy things into your gut.
Yeah.
Dude.
Yeah.
Do not be trying to impress me like that. Work hard, hustle, listen, ask questions.
Yeah.
You know, move around quick. But that kind of thing, no place for that.
I was kind of glad because I was like, man, I'm not the type so much to like But like, as soon as I saw him do it, I'm like, oh, Luke's going to get shit for that. And it was like, and so sitting there, I'm like, I'm kind of like nodding my head being like that. Again, impressive. So dumb. So
which, stupid. Okay, maybe yeah. This is worth talking about because we used to do this all the time. Framing, especially when it's coffee time and you've been up in the trusses and now it's time to swing down onto the floor. We used to do it all kinds of crazy, yeah. goofy ways because we wanted to be...
It's fun.
Yeah. And you want to like outdo the other person or like yeah. slide down one of the braces, like just surf down it.
Yeah.
All kinds of nonsense. But... I don't know. I'm just trying to think if we've done that kind of behavior where you're like, look at this stupid
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, to a degree, like but not that extreme. Like when yeah. you're talking about concrete anchor bolts,
yeah,
it's a bit different than, I don't know.
Because I think of like, I'll have to post this at some point. Like one of my favorite ways to get down off the walls and out of the trusses was to slide down a spring brace.
Yeah.
So what I'm talking about is you have an exterior wall here and you've got braces. So it's a 2x4 typically on the flat. And it's nailed to the wall here. It's nailed to the floor here. And there's a kicker on it because in order to pull the wall in, you nail the brace top and bottom and you take a 2x4 shorter one and you push it and you bend it and it pulls the wall in. So all over the house, so the structure, there are all these spring braces, we call them. So it's this bent 2x4 with a kicker on it, fastened top and bottom, nail through into the kicker. And to come down off the trusses or the walls, we would just take your dominant foot, your right foot on the top of the brace and you'd squat down. You kind of have your ass on your heel. You let your other leg hang down.
Yeah.
And you would just lean forward and your boot, you just slide right down the brace, right down to the floor.
Until you hit that nail that sticks up an eighth of an inch.
But usually once you're good at it, it was so smooth. Like you just like squat, put your foot, squat down, slide down. Just as you're getting to the, you just walk right out of it and walk across. Like it looks so slick. And it was super satisfying. So between that and then like grabbing bottom cords and swinging down, let yourself go. But again, like, the thing that could go wrong with those things, you're sliding down a brace. It's usually like 8 or 9 foot walls. We're not doing up these, you know, 16 foot braces and super tall walls. There's very little could go wrong. And if it did, you catch your foot, you kind of stumble forward and kind of yard sale your stuff a bit and stumble onto the floor. Okay. You know, you swing down to the trusses. If you're fit enough, you're hanging, your feet are 3 feet from the floor. You drop down, big deal.
Cause that was a fun thing. Like I remember I'm actually visualizing it, being up and you're doing the, what are they called? The blocks you do in between the trusses. The ridge blocks. And somebody's like, oh, I need you to come down quick or a delivery. Suddenly you have to get down really quick.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you're up at the top sitting there, nailing them in. And then it's, oh, hammer in, swing your legs over, slide down the trusses under each arm, down to the bottom and then swing yourself down, boop. And you're dropping down as quickly as you can. And you're now on the ground running around doing what you need to do. That was fun.
Totally.
To be able to swing around and do that stuff. Yep. But
not,
I can picture...
Not so acceptable anymore.
No.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay, so pride, overconfidence. Okay, big one. Fatigue. Being tired and you just aren't thinking clear. You're not moving good. You're stumbling around, which then leads into another one, which is frustration. And I can be guilty of that big time. So I get tired. Towards the end of the day, you've been... You know, you're standing walls, you're stripping, whatever you're doing, you're working your tail off. It's hard work. You're packing your tools everywhere. Mm-hmm. You get tired and then something goes a little sideways. You get frustrated and then you get rammy. And then you start to just like, I don't care if this, if there's a piece of tie wire sticking out, this stupid tie needs to go into the form and there's a bunch of barbs sticking out. I'm reaching in there deep fast because I'm pissed off. And all of a sudden you got like cuts all over your forearm or you're driving your nail bar in, you miss something, you break something like that. When that kind of frustration kind of flirts with rage and your brain shuts off and you become a bull in a china shop.
Yep.
That's a dangerous place to be. We talked about one, which it's happened to probably a lot of carpenters is let's say you've misnailed some LVL together and you're trying to, you managed to even get the plies apart. And all the nails, the heads tear through the one ply. You're trying to pull these stupid nails out. They're sticking out, you know, whatever, 1 3/4 inches. And you got your nail puller out and you're snapping heads off some of the stupid things. Some of them are pulling out. And then you've got, you know, you tell it because you did this. And you got a scar from it.
Because I got assigned, I don't know if I made the mistake, but I got assigned to take the multiple LVLs apart that were nailed together.
Yeah, that was definitely you.
Your mistake.
And so I'm standing there on the sawhorse trying to get
however many. Who does that mistake and then says, you take it apart?
It's true. Anyway.
Oh, that felt so good. Sorry, it was probably me. You were such a nice guy. You were going to take it apart from
we
me.
We weren't even, it wasn't even you. It was when we were working for Jules.
Okay. Yeah. So anyway, you're having to pull nails.
And so I'm on the sawhorse. I'm reaching up and it's, you know, the length of however many dozens of nails, whatever the nailing pattern was, and then having to pry them off. I was foolish enough to start at the right and move left, and I'm right-handed. So every nail head that comes off now becomes a sword that's sticking up behind me, and I'm prying this way. And so inevitably, but again, I'm tired, I'm annoyed, I'm sick of this stupid job that I got to do, and I'm getting more and more aggressive with it. And then of course it's going to pop off, and I'm working my way along, annoyed, because how am I going to get the nails out? And sure enough, and I just punch the beam with all that pressure, bang, and I go, and I pull my hand back, and I still have the scar on this finger. You can probably see it from there. And it goes through my finger. And I remember it wasn't like a big deal, right? It was pretty like flappy and
yeah,
and it hurt, but it wasn't like I got to go to the hospital or anything.
Sure.
But I remember no one else was around. And so I step off the sawhorse and I'm like, son of a, and I'm mad. I'm mad at the nails. I'm mad at myself. And then suddenly I'm like, ooh. And for, I don't know why, but I just got so woozy and I had to sit in the corner in the window. And I'm sitting there and I can't remember who came up and they're like, what's wrong? And I'm like white. And all I have to show for it is this stupid little hole in my finger. Like, I hurt myself.
Yeah.
Take me to the hospital. Pass out. Just baby. So on all fronts, I felt miserable. From the poor decision making to the poor response.
Yep. Yep. But to when you're making the mistake in the first place, then you had to fix it. It's so annoying. I think one of the, I mean, again, as far as the angry part, I think those are also some of the most dangerous people to be around. Because yes. That's when you end up hurting somebody else. You're so pissed off. You're pissed off maybe at yourself or whatever it is. But your filter for what's going on around you also disappears sometimes. And that's when you know, you can get some fights on a site because some guy, his hammer goes flying and someone else like yells at them because they did something stupid. Well, you yell at someone who's already pissed and worked up, you know, like it can get a little. So I think oftentimes those are, you see someone like that on site, just give them some space or yeah.
Yeah. And in those times you're doing those stupid jobs, like to still give it a second of like consideration and thought, like, okay, this is a crappy job. This is frustrating. How do I do this in a way that isn't going to make me lose my mind and be dangerous?
And sometimes you just need to come back to it, do something else.
Yeah. Take a break.
Yeah. It's a similar vein. Rebar can be a dangerous thing. So in our sites, you know, the last several years in particular, it became mandatory to put caps on all our verticals to kind of our footings. And depending how you're cutting all your stuff too, and how you, if you're ordering stuff pre-cut and pre-bent, you know, oftentimes you're cutting stuff yourself and you're using like a cutoff saw and you got these razor sharp ends. And, you know, if you're careless at all, you can, you know, you're in the heat of the summer, you're wearing shorts and you're stepping over, you know, bars that are sticking up a foot and a half and you're trying not to slice the inside of your thighs and all that sort of thing. And then you're also cutting them and passing stuff to your buddies. And
I feel like today people are going to come away from this thinking poorly of me. And you know what? That's okay. My shins tell the rebar story.
Yes.
And my pants. Mm-hmm. Like you'd always get the hole in your pants that was just the right height for everything that height to catch.
Yeah.
And so you're trying to step between as you're doing like your footings and everything. You got all the rebar and you're trying to cruise on through and you got your lumber and then you catch. And it catches your pants and you're like, I think nothing gets me more angry than stuff catching. Mm-hmm. Like when a cord, you're trying to pull a cord.
Oh yeah.
And you're tired and you're in a hurry and you're trying to set up a thing. And you're like, quick, you grab a cord and you want it to be here, but it's here. You just need to come here. All you need to do is come here. And I need you to do that. And you pull and it's, and you look and you can't see where it is.
Yeah.
And so you give her one of these, a big snap.
Yeah.
Indiana Jones whip snap and it doesn't come loose.
Yeah.
Cord? I have done everything on my end.
Yeah.
You're still stuck? You suck. and you whip, give it another whip, and yeah. And you now I don't care what happens to the cord. I'm pulling whatever it's attached to. I want it to break.
Yeah.
And you pull, and that I don't know what it is. There's some, it still bothers me.
Yeah.
A hose, you know, something.
Somebody should have developed a cord that had some stretch in it somehow. That in those situations, like if this isn't for a long period of time, but just for a minute, I'll give you an extra 4 feet. You can pull hard and it'll just stretch out, oh, do your yeah. cut, and then okay. Just to avoid that insanity.
It's like the hose or the cord always getting caught by your vehicle. And hits the tire. It's the worst. Because you're there's not even an exit. Why won't it slide around the tire?
And the fact that you know I have to wedging stop in there. What I'm doing to follow the stupid path of the cord and move the thing that is caught on. To me is just completely unacceptable when I could have just taken a second to look where the cord was and go, oh, that's just caught over here. And then I wouldn't have the issue. But I go, that's probably the only thing that makes me instantly angry.
I mean,
we're talking to a ton of people who are like pro cordless, everything, battery powered, everything now. This is a fading issue.
Right.
But for those of you who've been around the realm of construction sites with cords and hoses that were just like mandatory.
I think there's even been times where I've gotten it caught and I've pulled so hard, I hear the crash in the background. I'm like, F it. I don't care.
I don't even
ladder
care.
Went down. So, yeah,
I know. When they're going to make, they got to make like a cordless garden hose. When are those going to come out? That would be so wicked, right? I have to say about rebar, one of the coolest things though that I loved about cutting rebar, not on purpose. I'm cutting away. I've been doing like a whole stack. And then I smell a bit of smoke and I look down and my pant leg's on fire. It's so badass, right? And then you put it all out and you've got like this big burned part of your, you know, your, what kind of the pants were they? The Carhartts. And I loved that. A good hole in the burnt hole from the cutting is.
I still have, speaking of that, there's certain things that I have a fondness for. The smell of gas and diesel.
Mm-hmm.
Such a fondness for that. Like growing up, my dad was a logger. Before I was born. And when I was little, he'd take us out into the woods to get a Christmas tree or just do something in the woods. And he'd bring a chainsaw. Yeah. And the sound and smell of a chainsaw is just the best.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Or like when you hear it, when I hear a chainsaw, when I'm in the neighborhood and I hear someone using a chainsaw, I'm like, mm-hmm. Wow, somebody's doing work. Wow. Or the first time you hear a lawnmower going in the spring, you're like, yeah.
And it's the mixture oftentimes of the gas with the freshness of the green grass cuts or the chainsaw with the freshness of the pine or the
smell of the sawdust.
Like seriously, a cologne for men that was a mixture of that.
Call it chainsaw.
Chainsaw. Put it on your body. And just chainsaw.
Somebody make it.
I know.
Oh, right? I'd put that on.
Pine and gas.
Oh, man. I really want that.
Oh, anyway.
Pine and gas. You got to say it with your teeth.
The one that reminded me that when you talk about carrying lumber through rebar was carrying lumber. And what's the thing that makes you rage from time to time about carrying lumber?
Oh, this is it. I thought I had it, but this is it. When the stupid SOB at the top of my stack just goes a little... It's decided somehow that it's got this little napkin ability of just wisping around. Like, what is wrong with you? Everybody else in the stack is doing their job. You're on the top just...
Oh, that's so true.
Because you can't bring it back. You're like trying to bring your elbow in and you're trying to adjust on the fly, but it's drifting, and it catches on a wall.
Yeah.
I want to throw the whole stack.
Yeah. Oh, that's so
by
true.
By far, that's the most annoying thing.
That's a veteran awareness to have, is you're going to pick up a stack... The top 2x4. If it's got a crown, flip it over.
Yeah.
Because if it's bun the other way.
Exactly.
Like, for sure. Have a quick little check.
Why didn't you tell me that?
Yeah. I still didn't know until this moment why that happened.
Same. Oh, because. because it's bowed, you dummy.
Or you're picking up the stack, especially when you're trying to pick up like a, you know, you're kind of in the competition, buddy brought over four. Well, I'm going to bring five. Then you're going to bring six, seven. So you're in this huge stack. And to get your fingers underneath it, you have to kind of lean that whole stack over a little bit so you can get, but while you've done that, you've also opened up a little sliver of space, a little gap, put your nice fatty tissue against that. And then you go to lift it up and all that weight come down, pinches right on the inside of your forearm. And you just get like this little, that's another one of those instant mad.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Then you get the combo where you're carrying the stack, The top 2x4 is twisting, frustrating. Your stack is getting a little wily. I'm going to do a correction. I'm going to give it a little bounce to get things in line. And you then also
and you pinch
yourself.
That's,
that's a bad one.
Aggravating, aggravating moments of the dumbest mundane thing of carrying wood.
Yep. Another instant angry is when you've just gone to the tool shed because you're out of stuff. Put all the, you refill all your fasteners and they haven't all settled down to they're all nice and easy to get. And you go back to the job and you're just going to grab that nice fresh spike. Hand reaches in there and it goes straight up one of your fingernails. That's instant angry.
That's another veteran move that I did get taught because people who loved me and cared about me is you grab your 3-inch spikes and you quickly do the quick.
Yes. Yep.
You draw the nail head, ones that are facing with nail head out. Mm-hmm. And you just grab those and quickly realign and do that quickly. You can get really quick at it. Just chuk, 3 times. Then you drop it in your pouch. Everything's facing the same way. Mm-hmm. You're fast and it's all in there settled and it doesn't poke you.
Yep.
But why didn't someone tell you that?
Well, it's those rammy times you're in a hurry. Any more nails. Handful, dump in, back the job, grab it out. Under your fingernail.
Because majority of the time I agree. I would. I don't think I necessarily get all the heads going the same. Like, is that something you do before bed? And then you have these little piles perfectly for the next morning. But do you actually make all the heads go in the same way when you put them in your...
Yeah, it's fantastic.
How long does that take you?
Listen, it takes me the same amount of time as it takes you. Because you go, hey, I'm going to grab, like a Neanderthal, I'm going to grab a pile and just jam it into my pouch. And you're off. Yeah, you're ahead of me. You're back to work sooner.
Yeah.
But I come composed, organized, and I return to the work and watch. When I pull my 2 nails out, they're both exactly ready to rock.
Yeah.
Bang, bang. And you're over here going, oh, I got to flip it. Oh, hold on.
Yeah.
And then by the time I've done 5, you're still getting ready. So plus, don't even count the time where you stab yourself and then cry about it and then have to go back to the shack, get a Band-Aid.
Well, while you've done your 5... I've gone through 2 sticks with my nailer. So.
Yeah, exactly. Evens out.
That's great. Well, I've still got a big list here. We're going to have to do a part 2, I think, because there's a lot more to go through that's worth the discussion.
Can we do one more?
Yeah.
1.5 inches.
Oh. Okay, so this isn't...
I don't think we should talk about this.
Because I was waiting for that one. I'm like, that's okay. You just got it. Because
so this isn't. I wouldn't say this is actually a risk. It's just a heart stopper.
Mm-hmm. It could be a risk.
Yeah,
it can
lead to stuff. Yeah,
yeah.
But what we're talking about is that this is more of just a situation that anyone who's been in the trades for any length of time has had this happen, and we called it on our job site the 1.5 inch heart attack. Mm-hmm. And that is simply when you're walking on. It's usually 2x10 scaffolding, and you know you've got a lap. You've put one plank on top of the other and you're usually walking backwards, doing some layout, or you're shuffling sideways and you just don't know that you're at the end of the overlapping plank and you just step over and now you step down this far.
1.5 inches you step
down. And it nearly kills you.
Mm-hmm. I found
it's terrifying.
I'm trying to remember on walls when we were walking walls, sometimes depending on the situation, you'd go off from the cap plate to the top plate and we would know because usually if we were doing like trusses or something or other and you're up on the walls with someone else and you're just returning to quickly to get something and bring it over. And you would usually notice because the person would be motoring along and then all of a sudden they freeze and there's nothing happening.
And I think the danger really is what ensues in the next second.
Yes.
Because again, if you are carrying something, I've seen people fully let go of whatever it was and grab a wall or, you know, because of that little step, right? Because if you're up, you can be up pretty high on that and your body just goes into like that fight or flight and like, I am grabbing on and letting go of whatever it was. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I was just one that I was.
I miss walking walls. That was one of my favorite parts is being up on the walls with trusses going around. It always just felt like a big deal. Like we're doing stuff, we're getting it done. We got to work together. Mm-hmm. Yep. It's high, there's risk involved.
Yeah.
And not everybody can do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're like, I'm athletic, I have good balance. I'm good up here. I like this. I'm scooting around, I'm efficient. Like it was a fun thing to be good at.
Way better than in the ground. yep. doing footings.
And back then, again, because I don't think you're really allowed to do that anymore, especially the way that we used to. Yep. You know, it makes me think of like the old school log rollers that had that yeah. spear thing, and they're on the rivers and they're like jumping riding. Around, riding that stuff.
Hey,
like
those guys.
That's next
they're
level.
Tough.
It's crazy. Yeah. I can't believe that was actually a real thing.
Yeah. I know.
People that did.
So people who don't know what we're talking about, in Canada, and I think you fellas would know this, we grew up with that silly little cartoon that came on all the time, the Log Rider's Waltz, right? Mm-hmm. You recalling this? So on Canadian television, the Log Rider's Waltz was this really like poorly animated cartoon of a log rider riding down the river. And it was like a waltz that he would do with his bride, right? Do you guys not remember this?
Vaguely.
If you look it up on YouTube, CBC Log Rider's Waltz, you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. Hmm. So in at least my memory, growing up as a Canadian kid, log riders were like, whoa, they're tough. Mm-hmm. And in the cartoon, he's riding the log and he's jumping from log to log. And you can like break a leg, drown if you get caught between logs,
yep.
and run across. And in the cartoon, it like goes up and he like runs over the side.
That's right. I remember that.
And it goes over the waterfall and he's no problem.
Okay. I
and
do
then
remember
the,
that.
The log like fades away and now he's dancing with the bride and now he's back on the log. And I wish I could remember the tune. I would try to sing it, but you guys would hate that. And it just was like in my memory, like loggers, they're tough. Mm-hmm. And I heard on some sport I was watching, somebody made a comment, good old, it was UFC. Canadian fighter, and it was a recent fight, and the commentator was talking about him being like a badass Canadian logger. And I'm like, the stereotype still exists.
Yeah.
To be like this tough, I'm in the mountains, I'm in the woods, fallen trees, chainsaws, pine, diesel. See?
Yep.
Something about that. But the Log Rider's Waltz, people got to look that up.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Mark, cool. You might even put that on the episode because I can just picture it. Cheesy little animation of him doing that. So good.
That's awesome. Well, thanks, gentlemen. That scratched the surface on a bunch of other good stories and things to discuss. Thanks for watching and listening. We'll do it again here shortly and do part two. Thanks, everybody.